Women can't drive. Let's face it. Right? Am I right, fellas?
Yeah. Accidents.
This is Comedy on Vinyl. This is Jason Klom, and this week we are doing The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart from 1960. With me is Dan Gomiller,
yo.
Ari Jarvis,
hello.
And recorder contributor with a very sore voice, Mike Warden.
Hello.
That's very good. I don't know. Bob Newhart's one of my favorite comedians.
And me too.
Yes. It's also Aries. Dan?
I enjoy him thoroughly.
All right.
This although is going I didn't to be learn a... about him. Like, I didn't really hear until you started playing me some stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I hadn't really heard him before.
Did I play you records? What did I do?
No, you acquired some MP3s.
Ah, I acquired some MP3s. That's a very... very
PC way of putting it.
Very PC way of putting it, yes. So, we just realized, though, that the three of us don't really know this album as well as we know his other stuff, like the, somebody help me out. The, the Sir Walter Raleigh bit. Yes, the complete button down mind. But this is his first album. We'll just start, I'm going to start this up.
This is called a headset, and it's used by telephone operators, but it's also used by TV directors. And through it, they talk to their crew, and they also listen to the crew. Now, in a TV studio, they have a series of TV cameras, which the director watches. They also have what's known as a camera run-through.
Start this on this side is two. Where I started the record on side two, and this is...
And iron the bugs out.
This was especially true of the... For the CD generation.
There's nothing about Abraham Lincoln on that bit.
All right.
Right now, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Newhart. Thank you. Thank you very much. Many of you may have read The Hidden Persuaders. It's about advertising. And one of the points the book made was that the real danger of the public relations man or the advertising man was that they were creating images.
Basically, Bob Newhart was performing these bits at house parties, at friends' houses. One of them recorded it. It made its way up to a producer's house at Warner Brothers. This Warner Brothers producer called up Bob Newhart and said, I want to come to your next live show and record it, see if we can make a record. And he didn't do any live shows. He was a certified public accountant at the time. And so he sets one up in Houston, and they record it like 2 weeks later, and it becomes the biggest selling album of the year. Something like that.
That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. This kind of comedy I don't think you can do anymore, because now it's considered too quaint.
I think that's ridiculous, too, though, because I just love the sort of abstract... He takes advantage of the audience's imagination as opposed to miming, like, fucking someone from behind, which is a common thing with, I don't know, like, dirty stand-up.
I was having sexual intercourse. Well, here's what I think would have happened if John F. Kennedy were to be having sexual intercourse with Khrushchev.
No, but he's,
would have gone a little something like this.
No, because Bob Newhart would have been... Bob Newhart would have done it like JFK is calling up, who's Marilyn Monroe's husband?
Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah, right. And trying to avoid.
That's true. Hey there, Joe. You had a good evening? Oh, that's good. You sitting down? All right, that's good.
I'm surprised you can, Joe. That's why I love him. It's like he... It's a very set 60s humor, though.
Sure.
Like, I mean, I don't know, I feel like audiences are much more jaded now.
Sure, sure. And they want to hear anger, they want to hear this, they want to hear
that. Pushing the envelope, which technically he was, though. Sure. Cause, like, some of his stand-up where he's talking about his wife and his cats. There's one sketch he has where he's talking about getting his cat fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he makes so many, you know, allusions to, you know, male, like, human genitalia. And
right.
It's like, you know, if he messed, if you messed with that, I would act the same way. And, you
right.
know, it's, he is pushing the envelope for the time.
Sure, sure. Oh, I mean,
and now we're so...
Yeah. People don't get it that you can push the envelope thematically, which is not a word. I just push the envelope in how you can pronounce thematically. You can push the envelope thematically, but you don't have to do it necessarily with your language, quote unquote. Which,
right.
Or you can do it with language, the way George Carlin did. You just don't have to be an asshole about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I guess I'm old fashioned too when it comes to comedy. Swearing is not going to impress me. You just have to do something with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that noise.
I would be curious to hear, like, you know, people I work with that like comedy, what they would think of this album.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would they understand it? I'm sure they would laugh.
Sure.
I think they would be a little confused at first. Mm-hmm. And there's something about Bob Newhart where it seems like this sort of comedy, it lends itself so well to just audio.
Right.
But when you do see him just standing up there talking on an invisible phone,
uh-huh.
it's hilarious. It adds something.
That's so true.
I've never seen any of him do it.
I've just seen, like, clips.
Yeah. Me too. And I think I might have seen him on, like, Ed Sullivan or something like that. But that's about it.
You were talking about how he got discovered.
Mm-hmm.
I find that, because I've read half of his autobiography, and it's amazing. I just think I got distracted doing something else, but,
Sure, like you do.
He is a notorious slacker.
Sure.
He lived with his parents at this point. Yeah, like, even
so
years after he was touring, he just lived with his parents. And he just... He didn't want to do anything. That's why he became an accountant. He had no aspirations, and he was, like, kind of pushed to do something.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, all right. He's just... I think that's perfect how he was discovered from somebody else.
Did these bits come from improv then? Since I haven't read that book, I've just been reading the Smothers Brothers book that mentions a bunch about him. But did he do it all from improv, or did he write them, or was he just, like, drunk at a party?
No, he's always been funny.
Right.
And, like, I think he just, like, started with just going to open mic stuff. And, like, I don't know. He seemed kind of like a closet comedian.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't ashamed of it. I think what happened, he didn't want to make it a big deal because people would make him do stuff.
Sure.
He didn't want to actually perform and travel and everything. He just, you know, it was fun.
It's weird for this, like, just because from what I've been reading in the book, just getting a reminder of how much, like, the Smothers Brothers broke ground, and I'm talking about it so much. We are going to do that next week, I think, next podcast. But, like, they broke so much ground eventually. It took them so long to really get to where they were, but he again was, like, he broke records, like, literally. It did. Oh, hold on. Sorry. Yeah, we're in the middle of a track, so we didn't really, it doesn't matter. But, so I'm sorry. That was really exciting for everybody at home. But, where was I? Yeah, he broke records because he was actually in the top 10 with a comedy album, and nobody had done that. And then that's when people started to see the potential. And the book's pointing out that folk music, the popularity that was coming to a head, comedy had proven that it could, you know, be big. And then, so the Smothers Brothers sort of rode both waves so they could do really well. But I don't know, it's just... that a guy that wasn't necessarily a radical, it could still make it to the top at that time. I don't know. I don't know if that's
it. He wasn't at all, because he was also, like, he was a CPA for the military.
Was he really?
When he was I think it was Korea?
Uh-huh.
But he never left the States. He
right.
And it was so funny, because he would, like, they would go, like, to California.
Mm-hmm.
Him and these two other guys that they all worked together. And they'd just stay in the hotel, and they wouldn't do any work at all.
That's funny.
And then they would just, you know, get room service and stuff and just feed off the government.
That's hilarious.
And then they'd be like, well, I guess they were discovered at one point. But it's like,
where's Bob Newhart from? Where do you
Chicago. He's from Chicago originally.
So,
yep.
Was he part of that? Because 50s was... Why don't you take it away? It was the Second City started in 61 or 62.
Right, and then Nichols and May, I think, were both.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So.
I just didn't know if he was part of anything.
He wasn't really part of anything at all. He was of his own mind. You know, he did his own thing and then all of a sudden got sucked into all this other comedy and ends up doing sitcoms and stuff. Although I don't know what he was doing between this and the sitcom, unless it was just stand-up and touring the whole time. I have no idea. Which is, you know.
Sleeping on his parents' couch.
Sleeping on his parents' couch. That's right. But, yeah. My first memory of Bob Newhart, my first memory of Bob Newhart obviously is watching Newhart because I grew up watching that show all the time. But whenever I hear this, I think of the movie Heart and Souls, which probably makes me gay, but I love that movie, where his son's playing him very briefly in The Purple Onion. I don't remember, though. Wait, is that because of Charles Grodin's character? Why are they in The Purple Onion back in the 50s? Charles Grodin's character is like a performer, right? Yeah. And he's talking with somebody. Yeah, I always thought that was cool.
Oh, no, the Kira Sedgwick is a waitress.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. Watch Heart and Souls, kids. It's a great movie. It's Robert Downey Jr.'s shining moment. It is his greatest film, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. Chaplin, Iron Man, Heart and Souls. Heart and Souls.
I don't know why they didn't get like 5 to 8 Academy Awards.
5 to 8. I'm glad you
Johnny
spread.
B. Good was good.
Johnny B. Good? Yeah.
That's not a 5 or 8 Academy Award movie.
More like 3.
Heart and Souls.
What about Charles Grodin?
But the fact that, it's hard to get off on a Robert Downey Jr. tangent, but the fact that he played Anthony Michael Hall's jock. He was the very
wow. Oh, ow.
Casting, indeed. Dan, when's the first? Yeah. Ari, you go.
I'll go.
Go!
My first Bob Newhart experience.
Ooh, yes.
Bernard in The Rescuers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Good
oh,
call.
My God, I had the biggest crush on him. Apparently, that's when I knew I was
And now
into
the world
nebbish.
Is going to discover what Ari is into. She's into cartoon animals.
Nebbish cartoon animals.
Nebbish cartoon animals. Holy shit. That's amazing. How does a guy make a career out of stammering, though? That's like, I mean, this is funny, but like the personality behind it, as all comedy,
what King's Speech
is what salt really.
The
is
King
about Bob Newhart.
Really?
That's great.
I told him just pretend you're on the telephone.
hello, Hitler. yeah, Adolf. Yeah, this is the King. I don't know. I got nothing. But.
Well, the first thing I heard was the tobacco one.
Tobacco one's amazing. All about Sir
because
Walter
Raleigh. From I know from what I recall, my grandma Windsor saying is that I'm distantly related to Sir Walter Raleigh. So I think that's why you played it for me.
Oh, okay. And that's why you're insulted every time you hear it and you get angry.
Newhart.
Dan has a vendetta.
Love it.
So when are you going to kill him?
Next time I see him.
That's better.
I've got a plan that's been in the works for like 20 years now.
Maybe kids our age wouldn't understand this humor because they don't have imagination. Weeks,
I think that's what my movie looks like most of the time. We're just
damn really?
I know the submarine is up there.
There's definitely
on the back of the L.
Baseball and punching bags. So that would be your brain.
I thought that was a chart. It was kind of a chart.
It's a chart,
it's
but
a
an airplane.
Chart
right
an
off
airplane.
Of it. See,
it's
humorous.
It. There's the visual part of this
the album, of course, being called.
I'll
the button.
Show it to the microphone.
Take a look. Does that look good? Is that okay? So it's called The Button Down Mind of Bob Newhart. The back of it is a profile of Bob Newhart. His brain area has been vivisected into very coarsely drawn sections about Abraham Lincoln, which is on this, of course, which we just listened to. We didn't listen to it, but it was there. Submarine, a baseball, a chart. What's the airplane? Oh, no, that's airplane because he's an airplane guy at one point.
Wright
he's
brothers.
A, yeah,
marketing
sure.
for the Wright brothers.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's on, okay, and then there's a car horn and then a welcome mat, which is related to the welcome mat salesman, which is not on here. And doesn't exist, but I think it would have gone a little something. All right, let's see. Yeah. Okay. So, do we have a of his three favorite shows? I know Bob's my favorite.
You'll never be happy to know that you're
Elf. Elf. That's not true. Elf? That's your favorite show? Yes. That's your favorite Bob Newhart show. Oh, poor Ari.
Elf Newhart.
Elf Newhart. That is not a show.
Elf Newhart show.
Mm-hmm. I like the first one. I don't ever know which is which. I assume Newhart's the second one.
Newhart's the second one. The Vermont one. The first one, yeah, is probably a much better show. Bob
Newhart
show.
I know
Newhart
by
show.
The wives.
Yeah. All right. Actually, I heard the track stop this time, so we'll give it a second.
Good job.
And we're on the last track.
The best one!
The
last track being the third one.
Right, right. So Merchandising the Wright Brothers is next.
That's the second one I've ever
heard.
Since
none of us know this album, that is the second one you ever heard. All right, well then we'll actually give this one a listen for a second.
Woo.
I got thinking about inventions. Now, inventions today are handled entirely different than they were, say, 100 years ago. They set up new product corporations, they have sales promotion firm, and they look at the invention in a business-like way. And this got me to thinking, supposing the Wright brothers had gone to a new product corporation to market their new invention called the aeroplane. I think if they had, a guy from the sales promotion firm would have talked to him on the phone, something like this. Hello, who is this, Orville? Where's Willard? Wilbur, I'm sorry. And he'll be on late at the bicycle shop all week, huh? I talked to the guys here at the office, and we're real excited about this thing. We really think you got something. Well, we got a couple questions. I think you pretty much agree with us that the only way to make any loot on it is to start booking passengers as soon as possible. Yeah, well, we may pick up a little on the baggage gimmick.
So, this is the second one you ever heard? So I stole this MP3 too?
Yeah.
And played this for you?
You acquired.
I acquired the MP3 and played it for you. I think in every one, he does this every time, where if no matter what historical figure he does, I mean, he's being irreverent, which is, like, that was the key then, to sort of, like, exactly.
Very appreciative.
Yeah, but, like, every time he does it, he makes sure and twists their name into something much more conversational.
Yep. Yeah.
Walt. For Walt. Walter Raleigh.
Yeah. And I don't know. That's the key to the whole thing.
Baby, baby.
Baby. That's right.
One of my favorite parts of his is because I always think about how.
You're talking about Bob Newhart's favorite. Her favorite parts of Bob Newhart. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The butt. Maybe we could zoom a little snob appeal. Because I'm a writer, so I try and get as honest dialogue as possible when I write. And at first, it bothered the crap out of me that he repeats whatever they had said.
Right.
And it took me a long time until that became just funny to me.
Right.
And that adds a layer to the joke where it's like, you know, he would have had to say, like when you talk on the phone, you don't repeat their
right.
entire sentence.
You don't.
Still a pet peeve.
It's weird with phone sex, though.
So you put like what where?
Okay.
So your hand is there, okay. You want to do what tonight?
It does.
It's all in the brain.
I
really
think if phone sex existed between JFK and Marilyn Monroe, it would have gone a little something
like
this.
It. Yeah, you say you're going to do what to me? He didn't do impressions.
But he always does that. The Chicago, he makes the Chicago accent even more emphasized.
That's true with every.
And he kind of like makes his voice a little higher.
Yeah, somehow turns everybody middle America.
Yeah.
It works so well, but to know that that's funny
that's why
makes
it's
him
funny.
Sophisticated.
Someone from England talking to sort of Walter Raleigh on a phone with a Chicago accent. It's just, I don't know, totally irreverent. You're right.
Oh, it's good. All right, well, that's already the halfway point of the album, so we gotta flip it over. So as we flip this album over, ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna take a break, have a little urination time.
Yeah, pee.
And we'll be back with you in just a moment.
I love me, I love me, I love myself to death. I love me till I'm all out of breath. I stop at every slot machine that I should chance to pass and give myself a hug and squeeze. As I look in the glass.
All right, we're back. thanks for joining us again, even though you didn't experience the gap. Dan, have you ever experienced the gap?
I have a jacket from the gap.
You have a jacket from the gap?
No, wait, no, that's from Old Navy.
Old Navy. Well, then.
I'm a liar.
You're never, useless.
God. I've never experienced the gap.
So, when I listen to you guys' podcast, I actually pause at that point.
Just
to go bathroom.
To feel like you're
feel like
there.
I'm a part of it.
And now you're part of it.
I am a part of it. I went pee, just like I do. But it feels special now.
Good. I'm glad that somebody does. It's very nice.
I seem to have a very, I shouldn't be afraid of the gap, but I'm very intimidated by the gap.
Are you?
When I was little, my family couldn't afford Gap clothes, so it was like, when I went to the mall, it was like, we don't go in that store. And so it's translated still to my life now. I go in the Gap, but it's like, it's not like out of my range, but I'm just like, no, I can't.
When you go to England, you can't ride the subway because you get freaked the fuck out. You're like, is that what happens?
I feel bad.
You should.
I like
they
the
don't serve your kind there.
I know.
Banana Republic.
We vet them from outside.
I'm Banana Republic because I didn't have one in my mall when
right,
I was growing up.
Right.
So that one's fine.
What about Baby Gap?
I don't have any kids, though.
Right, but if you did,
and?
Let's say.
So you feel more comfortable there?
I would probably be okay with Baby Gap.
You
I
sure?
Would, yeah.
You wouldn't intimidate your kids from going there?
No, because Gap is like so open. You ever notice it's like open? There's like
that's why it's called
four
Gap.
Shirts in the whole place.
That
and
is
you
why
see
it's
them ten
Gap.
Times as you walk through.
Right.
It's like by the fourth time you see it, it's like, I do like that shirt. They've convinced me now that I enjoy it.
Even
that
though terry cloth wasn't your thing when you walked in, you're just like, you know what?
The Gap doesn't really bother me. It's like going into like Forever 21 or H&M, it always feel like a somebody's going to come over to me and say, I'm sorry, I think you're in the wrong store.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
don't have any closure size. I always feel really ashamed being in there.
That's sad. But I'm laughing
and
anyway.
I have formulated a rote answer. If anyone ever does come up to me, I'll say, I'm buying for a friend.
Oh. Aries sadness. This is a new podcast. That is its own podcast.
So far we've gone to deep places on both podcasts.
Yeah, some real. Wow, this is amazing. What is it
for a comedy podcast?
Yeah, right. The back of this record is not that interesting.
No, not at all.
I read it. It's kind of boring. The guy's trying to be funny. Like when people try and write about comedy and they try and be funny, it just doesn't usually work.
Wait, who wrote The Social Network?
Aaron Sorkin.
Okay, so not Dan Sorkin.
Not Dan Sorkin. No, this man who's very.
I was like, whoa.
That would have been a completely different.
In fact, this is what all he submitted.
Jack and Liner would have been completely different. In 1960, Bob Newhart recorded a podcast, and then you hear ding, ding, ding.
Oh.
Then there would have been a bunch of lies in there.
Yeah. Oh, who would have played him though? Who plays Bob Newhart in the movie?
Oh God.
I mean, I guess we could just go to Jesse Eisenberg's twin, Michael Cera. Yeah.
No.
No.
I think he'd be a good one. He would.
Hey, Wilbur.
But he would need somebody because even though he's nebbish and stammery, he's still got this self-possessed. I think. Well, I don't know. It's kind of like Jesse Eisenberg.
There's this kid who does improv at UCB. It does Ask Cat every Sunday night, named Chad Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And he would make an amazing Bob Newhart. Chad, if you're ever going to listen to this, you'd make a great Bob Newhart.
Keep that in mind.
Yes.
And we're casting
He's
right now.
Amazing.
Right now, only Mr. Internet listens to this.
Yeah, only Mr. Internet, but we've written the script.
Yes.
We're writing it right now.
We're writing it right now.
What was it? Is it
the Bob Newhart script, yeah.
Is it going to be based on his life, or we're going to do Aaron Sorkin it? Are we going to...
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to base it on Aaron Sorkin's life.
It should be like...
Bob Newhart as Aaron Sorkin. All right.
I think we're going to lie big.
Yeah. I don't know where to go with that at all.
I think about now is the time to start the next
one. All right, yeah. The next album. This begins with the Khrushchev Landing rehearsal. This one's particularly good, and I don't think anybody here is familiar with it.
This is called a headset, and it's used by telephone operators, but it's also used by TV directors. And through it, they talk to their crew, and they also listen to the crew. Now, in a TV studio, they have a series of TV cameras, which the director watches. They also have what's known as a camera run-through. And this is where they kind of walk through what they're going to do and iron the bugs out. Now, this was especially true of the Khrushchev landing. A lot of people don't know that Khrushchev landed a day ahead of time. And he kind of walked through what he was going to do so that they could set the cameras. And if you had been in the control room, you would have heard something like this. All right, Jerry, cue the plane. All right, have a plane come down. That's the way. All right, have a plane land. All right, taxi. All right, Jerry, have him stop on the chalk marks if you can. All right, he's going. That's all right. He's going past it. It's all right. All right,
get in. I want to see a plane try to land on chalk marks.
Yeah. No, after listening to that first sight and realizing he doesn't ever have, and this is again, is one thing that about comedy that I like, especially like Monty Python. The more I think about it. There's no needed. He doesn't have a punchline at the end. He's like, okay, you do that and get back to me. That's usually how he ends it. There's no punchline. Exactly. It's not like it doesn't need to be like. It doesn't need to be a punchline for what he's doing. That the act itself is what it is.
It's about the journey, not the destination.
Ooh, thank you, dude.
It's like it's almost as if he's pitching this as a sketch.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like he's like, okay, guys, this is gonna be a funny sketch. Now this happens.
Exactly.
And then this happens. Well, this is why it's funny. And then he just goes off. He's like, now these are the things that we could say in the sketch, and it doesn't have to be like, as you said, like there's no punchline because it's like, all right. If you were in a writer's room, people could take this for the next week, and then they would find the punchline. Here
it
is.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh. Well, that kind of just goes back to the fact that he was just telling these jokes at parties. You don't need a punchline for those kinds of jokes because it's just... Do your thing, and then just he does it, and everyone starts laughing, blah blah, and then it's he doesn't need to finish because everyone starts drinking and talking among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's yeah.
But he's also got a good time limit.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
if you're not gonna have a punchline, then you should have a time limit.
Yeah. I mean, what each side of this is what 22 minutes or so. So I mean, he's getting 8 minutes out of this, which most people wouldn't be able to do now without it hitting it over the head every time he finds. Right, yeah, thank you. But, like, he finds the... I'm not going to say finds the funny. I hate when people say that shit.
I've never heard anyone say that.
You've never
now
heard
it's
that?
Be,
the funny.
Whenever I hear that,
say
I'm
going to
be like, Jason says that.
No! No! Ari is a bitch. That is all everybody needs to know. God damn it.
That just comes from him performing it, though. It's like you learn where the jokes are. Even when it's not funny, you learn where... Oh, there it is. There's the laugh. I didn't know that it was funny in my head when I wrote that.
Right.
And then he finds it and he knows where it is.
But the idea that he could do this bit right now, I'm sure he had a little practice, but he did not have practice in front of people.
No.
That this works so solidly fucking on take one, I don't know what that means, except for, like, there's a reason it shot that quickly up the charts. It just, I don't know. How a phenomenon like that doesn't happen that often, except for, like, now he was the Justin Bieber of his day, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think the thing is that, like, a lot of what he talks about...
Is he Canadian?
No, thank Christ. Thank Christ.
No.
Chicago's kind of close.
That's really close.
That is
a little bleed through. But, like, a lot of what he talks about tends to have some sort of marketing or PR kind of influence on it.
Sure. Yeah.
Which, you know, especially at that time, that's when they started becoming, like, the big thing.
He's more the Jonathan Colton of his day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jonathan Colton, his whole thing is he started in... You know, he was a club monkey.
Yep.
He hated it.
Yep.
And he hated bureaucracy. He hates all that. And so it's like he was able to tap into what we all hate.
Yeah.
That's exactly where I was going with that. It's like he's...
Sorry.
No, I'm just saying that's good. That's...
Fight. There are a couple. Fight.
But just like, people were starting to see how, you know, everything was starting to get over-branded. And over, you know, marketed, and just like nothing is natural or normal anymore, except for apparently this album.
Sure, sure.
But and so I think he was tapping into that, and I think it's just really interesting that he can do that so well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you know he was an accountant, you know.
It's funny though when you say that because like they're kind of nostalgic for the good old days. And we're sitting here, kind of nostalgic for the good old days.
Yep.
Back then.
When marketing was just being born. Yes. Boy, how I miss those days. When a cigarette was still just a cigarette.
And it was on TV.
Ah.
Cocaine changed all that.
Yeah.
And the marketing guy's like, all right, here we go. We got it. We're going to put it right in their face. They're not going to have a choice. They're going to see it all the time.
Justin Bieber.
Oh, I shouldn't have brought up Justin Bieber. I apologize. Yeah. Bob Newhart, who is totally listening to this right now.
I don't know. 13-year-old girls are kind of our target demographic.
That is true. They're your target demographic. Oh. Really? Really? I get that kind of reaction? It's because I'm not Bob Newhart. Fuck you. Fuck you, people. The next one is... I can't read sideways. Driving instructor. This one is about a woman driver.
That's right. That's what it's about.
Well, it's about a driving instructor.
There is a woman.
As I said, there was a thing in the paper tonight about documentaries, and I've had an idea for a long time for what I think is a wonderful documentary, which has everything. For instance, you go to work, you come home at night, and you never really think about it. It's mechanical, it's routine. But there are a group of men who every day, when they go to work, never know if that night they'll return, because they face death in 100 different ways. And I'm talking about America's driving instructors. And I'd like to present the first episode in the new TV series called The Driving Instructor. Now, I'd like to have you picture, if you would. This is a car. I'm the driving instructor, and seated next to me is a woman driver. How do you do? You're Mrs. Webb, is that right? Oh, I see you've had one lesson already. Who is the instructor on that, Mrs. Webb? Mr. Adam. I'm sorry, here it is, Mr. Adams. Just let me read ahead and kind of familiarize myself with the case. How fast were you going when Mr. Adams jumped from the car? 75.
You should possibly sell this show.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't yet.
Yeah.
Put her in a bikini.
Yep. See if she can drive covered in grease.
I can totally see that being, the Beverly Hills driving instructors.
Uh-huh.
With all the girls on there, texting.
Yep. It's just weird to hear him talking about TV documentaries. He's obviously talking about what are now termed reality shows, and you don't think about how much, documentary stuff was happening then. Alan Funt's stuff, Candid Camera and all that crap.
Yeah.
But then, they must have been doing much more that we don't see now, because it never survived tape or film. But it's probably very similar. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. You don't think of it that way, so I feel undereducated.
Well, you are, so sorry.
I think it's interesting, a marked difference between his comedy and comedy now,
mm-hmm.
is that he is always being somebody else.
Right.
It's not, my mom said this, or... my girlfriend does this or something.
Right.
He's not him. And I was thinking about this because you were talking about, I don't remember what I said, but you said, I'm reading the Smothers Brothers book, and it has a lot about Bob Newhart.
Right.
And it's funny because Bob Newhart's book has a lot about other comedians.
Yeah.
And then, when I went and when I met Carl Reiner, he only wanted to talk about Smothers Brothers.
That's so funny.
So it's comedians, there's that old, not adage or anything, but they say that they, poach other comedians' jokes.
Sure.
It's not so much that. They poach each other's stories. And they're like, this is hilarious, because they appreciate other people's stories.
Right.
And, they want to get them out there or something, but, yeah.
There's a couple comedians out there, stand-ups now. Nick Kroll is one of them. Do you know Nick Kroll at all?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he does, he's a character-based guy, but his is more... Not like Newhart didn't. Newhart didn't encapsulate characters like you were saying. He didn't do voices and stuff like that. But Nick Kroll and some of these guys are doing the voices, and they're actually going off where their stand-up is completely character-based. It's not, I'm standing up and telling jokes at you. It's this
yeah.
is the character, and this is the situation, and imagine this. And which is funny. It's a different way. It's You know, it's making like a sketch type of stuff.
Yeah, it's a more active way of exactly. doing observational humor. Yeah. You know, in a totally different way that isn't just doesn't get belabored by your character. So he's not like it's not right. He's not. It's not 50 minutes of Bob Newhart observing shit. It's 50 minutes of Bob Newhart as this character observing shit, and what six different characters doing the same thing. It's not all, I guess, entirely observational, the cruise ship thing, but I mean, it's timely at the time, so,
I think if I ever did stand-up, I could do it this way a lot easier. Coming from, like, acting musical theater background, it'd be easier to, like, if I have a character and it's written out, I'm performing the character.
Sure.
If you don't laugh, you're not laughing. You're more or less laughing. Not laughing.
You're right. That's true. I mean, there are plenty of, like, dead spaces in here because, A, these people have no idea who this guy is. And B, the setups are just that. They're just setups. And, like, you maybe can't see the potential in all of them at first. Like, the Wright Brothers, okay. Well, the Wright Brothers, but this.
Yeah, when at first you're not really sure where he's going to go with some things. But by the time, you know, he reaches the end, it's just like, this guy's ridiculous. So random.
Oh, fuck. Fuck you.
Who says that?
Fuck you, I don't say that. He looks really young on this cover. That's because he is.
He looks a little bit like Bing Crosby.
He's right out of the army. He's got the buzz
haircut
still.
And everything. That is so fucking funny. We don't have Wikipedia in front of us, so I don't know what he did after this. I don't know, like how stand-up led to... Well, I know how stand-up leads to TV shows. I get that. But, like, he must have been doing a lot of variety shows since those were
probably
the thing to do. Unless he had other shows we don't know about, because, I mean, what? Betty White had a show back in the 50s nobody talks about.
Yeah.
And even the Smothers Brothers, they had a pilot.
They had
a show.
What? You haven't seen those?
No.
Naked Pictures.
Betty White was hot when she was young. Yeah. All right, I need to find these. Sorry. I have a thing for old women. No, but because the Smothers Brothers, they had a show before the show. They had a pilot, a sitcom where Tom was an angel.
Really?
Tom was an angel, and he came down and helped Dickie through his life.
Awesome.
And, yeah, I want to see it, but they hated it with a passion, and they thought it was the worst use of them as actors, so that's... They finally got... They worked it into doing their own reality show.
Do you think he writes his own tweets?
Bob Newhart? Does he tweet?
Yeah.
He does?
Yeah.
I hope so. I need to follow him now.
It's all dates. Where he's performing.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh. Then no. I'm going to say no, probably
not.
Unless they're really hilariously written dates.
This is a great one from a month ago.
Performing?
Don't forget to watch NCIS Season 8, Episode 11, titled Chips in the Night, which airs on Tuesday, January 11th at 8 p.m. on CBS. Great tweet.
He has not lost it.
Not one bit.
Is he on NCIS? Because there's like 10 NCIS.
I guess so. Okay. That's really weird to me.
Just finished shooting NCIS. Details to come.
I wonder if he was on NCIS.
I don't know. Bob Newhart to appear on NCIS itself.
Oh. There was a murderer. I would think it would go
a little something like that.
Well, at least they're not like crazy funny tweets that. I mean, he's plugging himself, which is great.
Sure.
Yeah. It's probably his marketing PR firm.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's okay. That's the reason for Twitter. Then, okay.
That's all he does.
I just didn't want to see like really funny like
Bobby Baby.
If my PR firm calls me,
something like that, and then he just plays a voicemail.
That's his new act. That's what he does. He's just like he's discovered voicemail, and he's like, fuck it. That's what he puts up against the mic the whole time for 45 minutes. Oh, people clap. People are clapping.
Yeah, it's the end of that one.
So, what'd you guys think of that one that we didn't listen to? You've heard it before, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Women can't drive. I know that's not the point. But women can't drive. Let's face it. Right? Am I right, fellas?
Accidents.
Right, Ariana?
I'm leaving.
Yeah, they'll say that after you storm off.
I left. Oh, shit. So, yeah. Bob Newhart's awesome. There's one more track to this. But
I don't know that one.
You don't know it. Nobody will ever play baseball. Well, that tells you right what's gonna happen. I mean, I don't know who's pitching it, but I'm hoping it's Abner Doubleday.
I'm pitching it, but I'm cheating.
Ah. Well, I get it.
All right. Well, let's do this. Maybe it'll have a little, maybe there's some Cooperstown relevance.
Hey, Cooperstown.
Because Dan and I are from near Cooperstown.
That's the name of the town.
Near Cooperstown. Cooperstown adjacent.
I got thinking about baseball and how games are marketed today. You know, you go to a game manufacturer and they figure everything out and decide whether the game is right for the public or not, and then they market it. And it got me to thinking, supposing Abner Doubleday had called one of the game manufacturers with this new invention of his called baseball. Now, I think a phone conversation would have taken place something like this. Hello, Olympic Games. What can I do for you, Mr. Doubleday? You've got a game. How many couples? 18 people? That's a hell of a lot of people. Well, the ideal game is, I mean, 2-3 couples, you know, come over to the house, they get a little smashed, and, you know. You can't play it in the house either. See, you got two things right there against you. See? All right, tell me about it. All right, you got 9 guys on each side. Yeah.
And you got baseball.
That's your comment, Dan?
Oh, yeah, baseball.
Oh, baseball.
Baseball's boring.
It is boring.
So he calls up THQ and he says, baseball. It takes 18 people. So it's online game.
Memorphica. Is it just me or, like, Bill Cosby did the invention of basketball.
That's true.
Didn't Andy Griffith do the invention of football?
Yeah, he did.
Do you think that was like they were doing rock, paper, scissors to see who gets to do what sports?
It's so just
ended up with hockey.
It's a requirement.
but does that Justin mean that Bieber ended up with hockey?
That's the ones that they enjoyed. We know which sports which comedians enjoyed.
Yeah. Gilbert Gottfried did curling.
Show dance this rock! That's all I got.
That's all it was.
That's all it was. And then he left the stage. And everybody was angry for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I was like, screw you guys!
Is that what he said?
Yeah. Oh. I was Iago! I'm Shakespeare in Aladdin.
That's his claim to fame
that's
now?
That's his claim to fame.
Oh, that's really sad.
He's probably the only other person listening to the podcast. He's like, screw these guys, I'm not listening anymore.
You gotta give him credit, though. Whenever he's doing stand-up, he doesn't wait until he's back to be over, like, with the whole 9/11 thing. He's the first one making the joke.
Yes, he was.
He always does, and now that's his thing. Whenever there's a big tragedy and stuff, he's like, I'm gonna be the first one.
Or a little tragedy. He even goes for those.
So somebody's, like, toddler dies in a small town. Yeah. He read about it in the paper. Did you hear about the stupid little 3-year-old whore? She died. It was hilarious. What a bastard. Gilbert Gottfried, if you're listening, I hate you. Oh, that's not
unless you want to come be a guest on our podcast.
Yeah, unless you want to be a guest. The album's over already.
Wow.
We were so busy making fun of Gilbert Gottfried, we didn't get to hear him talk about baseball.
Who, Gilbert Gottfried?
No. Bob Newhart.
Oh. Newhart?
Yeah.
Well, that was a shorter one.
It is a lot shorter. Final thoughts on the album, kids, and why people should listen to Bob Newhart.
Because he's amazing.
For history.
Yeah, it's almost like a history lesson because he does explain certain aspects that hopefully you would then go and research the actual information later.
Yeah, if you didn't already have an idea, because you do need a cursory knowledge of everything he's talking about to understand why it's funny. If you don't understand the basics of the Wright brothers and understand there weren't toilets on those first planes, it's not going to be funny.
And then, boys and girls, if you don't want to go educate yourself, you can listen to him because it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly true.
But some people, that's what they listen to.
Is that why they listen to humor?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Not Dan, though.
No.
Dan does it for the sake of education. He can't read, like, normally. Mm-hmm. He can't read unless he listens to a comedy album first.
All the facts that I get, too, come from comedy.
Is that true?
I believe it.
Yeah. What have you learned because of that?
Well, Dane Cook's taught me a lot about religion.
Has he?
Yeah. Has he?
That there is no God? That's what he's taught me.
Greatest Hits album out.
Wait, there's a Greatest
Hits? There's a Greatest Hits Dane Cook album
Fuck.
That came out. It was on the new release,
oh,
actually.
God.
I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, he invented the super finger. mic, so that's funny. That's a joke.
He did.
It's one middle. It's a middle finger with an extra finger. See, and that means fuck you more.
Right.
That's his thing. God. There are stickers that I could go for an hour on how much let's not concentrate on how much we hate Pink.
But he'll sell a lot of copies and you'll still never meet anyone who admits they like him.
Right.
It's amazing.
Well, I know plenty of people who say that they like him.
He's a bag.
And it makes me feel weird that they do. Well, like, I'm curious about, because, okay, this woman who was at my work, my boss is a comedian and she does stand up. And this chick who was always brown-nosing, but anyway, she's gone now. She died. was making a point about how she hates Ellen. Just hates her because she doesn't push the envelope, because she's too PC.
Uh-huh.
Which I don't really agree with. But
did she see the whole lesbian thing in the 90s?
Right? But I think there's a line between clean humor and just too PC or not trying to make a point. And it's like, you know, I'm a big fan. I mean, Eddie Izzard swears a lot, but he's pretty clean.
Yeah.
And Ellen, Bill Cosby, Bob Newhart.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, we watch some, you know, Comedy Central Presents and stuff just to see who's out there now. And a lot of them just aren't funny when they're just going for the gross out.
Right.
Because you and I have had conversations in the past about what is comedy. And
right.
Whether or not there's, like, a order of comedy. If everything, this is funny.
Right.
And if you don't think this is funny, or if you're laughing at, like, Adam Sandler stupid movies or something, then you don't know what humor is.
And right.
So it's just, I don't know. I think, for me, clean humor is just where it's going.
She can't see your air quotes. Yeah.
It was in my voice.
Air whoosh.
Clean humor.
She's still not doing it right.
Anyway, is more tapping into what everybody experiences. It's not just like, well, white people walk like this. And notice I do the black voice.
For the record, they do walk like that.
Well, we do. Like ducks, all of us.
That's why it's funny, because we do.
That taps into my shared experience.
But, I don't know. Like, I feel like Bob Newhart,
also walks like a duck.
He does, because he's white.
Yeah.
Like, he was making fun of women in the last one, but he was also just making fun of this woman.
Right.
And it's like,
I
feel like everyone can kind of identify with, oh, marketing is changing. And,
sure.
I think you can also you can identify with how he writes his jokes, because it's like, this is how people talk when we're having a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if somebody was actually trying to pitch this to something, and this is what the conversation comes up, and then he just talks because he's a very, very funny person, so it just comes out.
The genius is that somehow works with just the one side of the conversation. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to do two sides of his mouth, and that's...
I think that works better. Because, we didn't hear very much of the codfish? Codfish?
Yeah.
USS Codfish?
Yeah.
Where, you know, it talks about, I just love when he's saying, like, you know, we're coming to the end of our trip, and I'd really like the first lieutenant back. No, guys, it was funny, but, you know, he's like, I just love that, because it's like...
Oh, I forgot that. That's that. So I've heard that one, too.
Yeah, the submarine, I just like that it's because you can picture, like I said, the imagination, where you can picture all the, you know, naval officers just sitting there.
Yeah.
Not helping at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the image of
if he went to everybody, that wouldn't, it wouldn't work as well.
No, that would be really, really tedious. Really tedious. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he doesn't have to do voices. He's just... You know, doing that one character.
He is like Sam in Quantum Leap.
So true.
Comedy on Vinyl. I'm your host, Jason Klom. With me, I was going to say, as always, is Dan Gomiller, but Dan Gomiller's here.
Next week.
Ari Jarvis is our first time, not last time, contributor. And obviously, Mike Warden is our producer, recorder, and contributor with a hoarse voice. Everybody have a fantastic whatever day this is, and I apologize deeply.
I look so good, but me
he thinks I'm just fine.
Comedy on Vinyl is recorded at Fort Awesome Studios in Burbank, California. Follow us on Twitter at Comedy on Vinyl, and follow us on Facebook, or like us at goo.gl/VMFZ, as in zinc.
My arm around my waist, if me get fresh, I slap my face, I'm wild about myself.